Good afternoon, Croc Nation. This is your friend, Dr. Tom Iannelli, your favorite cancer survivorship bus driver. To my left, Angel Santana. Hi, Angel. How are you?
¿Qué pasa?
Exactly. Except for our bilingual survivors. Angel, we're going to do something a bit different today.
How different?
A little different. We are going to go back to the past to go to the future.
Oh, and no flux capacitor.
Without even a DeLorean. All exactly right. So what today's podcast is we are going to be, instead of setting the table with an article, we are going to be cleaning the table. So the dinner has been served. We have finished our dessert. We had a small glass of Sambuca. And now it's time to clean the table and do the dishes. So the article that was presented prior to this particular podcast, this is just further clarification and embellishment of that article. The name of the article, Trust-Based Partnerships Are Essential and Achievable in Healthcare Service. We were very lucky and privileged to have had on our podcast Dr. Len Berry, Professor of Marketing at Texas A&M, and Dr. Rena Audish, who's a physician extraordinaire, best-selling author. You all know this because you've listened to the podcast. Just a quick apology prior to airing this, going back to the future through the past, is that I did mispronounce Dr. Audish's name in this particular podcast. I call her Rena, but her first name is actually presented and pronounced Rena. So for that, I do apologize.
All right. So are we getting in the DeLorean right now?
We're ready. Let's go back to the future through the past.
So that means that if we're going back to the future, we're going into the past, which means I've got to push this button, and we count down to the show.
And we will count down. And the other thing that's interesting is this is also something different. This is the first and last time that you will introduce the podcast.
Very true. So when do we start?
Right now.
Seven, six, five, four, three, two, one.
TRUST, one of the hardest words out of the top, what, three? Trust, honesty, and love. Trust, that's huge.
You know, I always like to think, and I know that you're a spiritual man, you have a spiritual podcast. I always like to think that God has a reason for everything. And I bet you many of our listeners, cancer survivors, probably haven't even reconciled why they suffer with cancer, why they have to deal with what they have to deal with, why them. But for Rena, I'd like to think that even though it was a horrific event, something came out of it. God had a plan for her and for her family. Because from that experience, she kind of changed gears in the sense that she's still an outstanding clinician. She's an academician. She's the head of pulmonary hypertension in Detroit at the Henry Ford Hospital. She's a really, she's an internationally renowned physician. She's a best-selling author relating her experience. And we will actually have a surprise for our Croc Nation at the end of this podcast, actually an offer for them. And also a change in philosophy. When Rena was going through this, now what my Croc Nation doesn't know is that we tape ahead of time. So this introductory lecture on the article that we're going to review and our actual interview with Len, our friend Dr. Len Berry, and with Rena is actually a week from Saturday. So we haven't really met her yet other than on emails, but what a fabulous person, what an instrumental and life-changing physician. And while she was recovering, she noticed there was a lot of discontinuity of care. This is in her own hospital. Her colleagues, the way they spoke, they thought she was not listening or asleep or out of it. Some of the things they were saying, and just the dysfunction, you know, of medical care, the lack of empathy really changed her. And she's really made it her life's work to change that, to help physicians communicate more effectively. And she's going to tell us all about that when she comes on the podcast. But well, what an amazing woman. What a true a tale of, you know, Croc's motto has always been turning tragedy into triumph. And here this woman's life has been actually that lived, the motto lived. So let's get a little bit into trust and talk a little bit about her article along with Lennon there. We'll go through all the introductions before their podcast as far as the all the authors and things like that. But let's just state the article's name, and it's Trust-Based Partnerships Are Essential and Achievable in Healthcare Services. So, Angel, you mentioned the word trust. What is the first thing you think about in trust when you're thinking about your healthcare team?
Without having to use the word again, because that's very common, just putting your heart and soul into that person.
Okay. Well, what trust generally revolves around that we think, when we think of trust with healthcare, what patients usually think of is they want to trust their doctor's competence. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm going to this doctor because I think that he or she will do a really good job. They're a good surgeon. They're a good primary care physician, they're a good emergency room doctor or whatever, they have good reputations, they know what they're doing. That's generally the first superficial layer of trust.
True.
Is the competence of your practitioner. But let's think about this. I just listened to a few of your podcasts where you're having trouble with your microwave, you're having trouble with your cable TV, Angel versus the World, right? That's listen, Croc Nation, get on Have Faith, Let It Begin, and you'll have a few laughs with Angel. But all kidding aside, healthcare is not going and ordering a hamburger. Healthcare is not going to a paint store and picking out a paint color. When we go into a store or a restaurant, we trust that they're going to give us food that's not going to make us sick, isn't going to kill us. But really, and I was thinking about this, in what other profession do you lose that control of your entire body? You lose that control. You let people draw blood out of your veins. You let people put breathing apparatuses into your breathing tube. You have people feed you into your stomach. You have people that are cutting you with knives. Just even without the invasive stuff, you're undressing. You're taking off your clothes. It's just, these are things that you just don't do, you know? And you come into a doctor's office to someone you've never met before. And they, first of all, they ask you how old you are, right? So that's right off putting right before you even start. Yeah. And then all of a sudden, you know, they're telling you to take off your clothes. They're examining your breasts. They're doing a pelvic exam. They're doing a rectal exam. Yeah. They're looking at your insides on an x-ray. This is a very intimate, you know, relationship. And if you can't trust that person, see, trust goes far beyond just making sure that person is competent. Trust goes far, far, far in that. So I believe that trust in healthcare is beyond competence. It needs to be far more than that. There are things that Raina and Len and the other authors of the paper mentioned as far as transactional and non-relational services. So there are times in medicine where you can get away without, you know, super duper trust or without all that intimacy or whatever. Say you want to get your flu shot and you go to CVS and you get your flu shot. That's called a transactional or non-relational event, right? Non-relational event. Say you go to the urgent care, you have a, you know, an earache. They take care of you. Really, there's not too much going on there, so you really don't have to worry. But with the other things, especially in cancer, and what Raina points out in the paper, and she's a pulmonologist, imagine the trust that we've had to engender during the coronavirus epidemic, you know, how the world stopped and patients are coming into hospitals alone, very, very sick, and there's no one there to hold their hand or whatever. So that trust level had to be upped, you know, quantum, like logarithmically, you know, up. So that's something that really, I think, really helped the environment for building that trust. But healthcare's true purpose is to recognize the special need of the customer, and I use customer quote unquote. These customers, quote unquote, are under stress, anxiety, fear, and oftentimes during pain. So not picking out paint colors, as I said, or ordering a hamburger. This is a very intimate setting. This is as intimate a setting there can be. I had an uncle who was an attorney, and he once said to me when I was going to school to be a doctor, you know, we deal with the vicissitudes of life. We deal with the sacredness of life. And I really think, you know, in the law, in medicine, and in the spiritual arts, like the priests and the rabbis and things, and the pastors, really, those are the three cornerstones where trust has to be absolutely implicit, you know, in the relationship. So going through Raina and Len's paper, trust is the cornerstone of this relationship. It is the way we empathize. So the first goal, or the first, I guess, what would you say, exercise in trying to achieve this trust is taking this leap. And not many of us do this because, you know, people bother us. I mean, you know, unless you're doing something for us, you know, people are asking us to do work. They're trying to exact something from us. They want money from us. They want favors from us. They want to achieve their agenda at the expense of our agenda. And very seldom does a person come out of their own person and try to put themselves in the shoes of another person. And that's really the simple definition of empathy. And I think that the caregivers have to do that as the first step. They have to take that step where they're actually taking that leap of faith and becoming empathetic. They have to learn how to listen. A lot of us know how to talk. Not a lot of us know how to listen. And I'm guilty of that. I interrupt people all the time. Start saying something. I'm here. It's me. I have to talk. So, you know, I'm terrible at that. So we have to learn how to listen, become good listeners. And actually, the second podcast I hope to tape with Lennon and Raina will be about listening skills. We have to look at the perspective, you know, when you're a patient, just the design of the room. Like, is your doctor sitting across the room from you, or are they right next to you? Are they at eye level with you? Are they looking at their computer screen? Or are they looking at you? What is their perspective? What is their interface? And then the last thing, well, not the last thing, but another thing is the language we use. You know, are you hiding behind your medical jargon and your medical nomenclature? Are you trying to kind of separate yourself with fancy words? You know, if you're taking care of a Manhattan corporate lawyer and you want to use a couple of fancy words, okay, that might be okay. But what if you're taking care of a dairy farmer out here in Putnam County, or if you're taking care of, you know, someone, you know, who works on the assembly line in Brooklyn in the Navy Yard or something, you know, you have to be able to communicate with these people. So your language, also how you say things. You know, you might be able to say things that are very hard, sometimes sad, sometimes scary, but sometimes a person could get great trust, develop trust with you if you do it in a way where they know that that you care about them. Mm-hmm. So these are all things that we're sort of looking at. Again, back to the paper, they utilize four core concepts, and we're going to kind of look at these four concepts. And again, we're going to get into much more detail during the actual formal podcast with Len and Raina, but we're kind of setting the table for them here. There's four core concepts to develop this trust. One is called empathetic creativity, and we're going to make sure we give you examples of each of these. One is discretionary effort. One is seamless service. And the last one is fear mitigation. So let's talk about empathetic creativity. This is something that I think that I'm pretty good at. And I don't say that as a narcissistic, egocentric, you know, doctor. I just think that kind of that word, just those two words, really speak to me, because through my career, that's kind of what I try to do. I try to be empathetic, but also be creative. So let me give you an example. So say you're an 8-year-old kid and you have cancer and you have to go to the McCullum Radiation Oncology Center out in Australia. And, you know, you're 8 years old, you know, what do you know about life and death really? But you know that you know, something bad's going on with you and your parents are crying every night and you're going to this scary place and they're going to give you these X-ray treatments. Say you go in there and really everyone is doing their job, not going above or beyond, but they're just doing their job. You're going to be a scared kid. But what if you walk in the door and my friend Sandra, our front desk person, or Millie or Kathy or somebody tells you, you know, hey, Angel, who's your favorite superhero? You know, do you like Batman? Do you like, I think you're a Batman guy.
No, Superman.
Oh, you're a, that's right. I forgot, you're a Superman guy. And they take you into a changing room and they let you put on a Superman outfit.
Nice.
And then a film crew comes out and they start taping you. And they tape you as you're walking into the clinic, and they tape you as you're going into the radiation machine, and they tape you while you're going meeting all the people, and you're going into the exam rooms and all those types of things. And then when you finish your radiation, they hand you a movie where you're the superhero of this movie. It kind of changes the perspective a little bit on you know, this is called, you know, an example of empathetic creativity. I just think that was, I thought that was a beautiful example.
Awesome. I like that.
It was really good. Discretionary effort. Here's something we do here in our clinic a lot. And I give our hospital a lot of credit because there is dollars involved here. And we know healthcare is on a very short margin. So, you know, we're always very cost conscious with trying to make sure we're not wasting. But say you're a patient and you're just finishing, you have one more treatment for your radiation before your breast cancer is done and you're a survivor. Oh, you're a survivor anyway, but you're actually done with your treatment and you go on to the next phase. And the day after, your family surprised you with a cruise. You have a Disney cruise all set up for you. You're leaving, you have your plane at 8 o'clock in the morning, you're going to Florida, and then you're gonna get on the Disney cruise ship and you're gonna have the greatest time ever celebrating. You know, your treatments are over and there's this big sentinel moment for you and your family. And then David or Joe or Milena or Mary or Caitlin or Jess come out and they say to you, you know what, Angel, I hate to tell you this, but the machine is down. We're going to have to give you that last treatment tomorrow. And you're not going to be able to get that flight and you're not going to be able to get on that boat. How are you going to feel?
Ugh, miserable.
You're going to be broken.
Yeah, just like, because you get mentally prepared.
How about if the center stopped what they were doing. They sent one of their workers on their own time to get in their car and to drive 2 hours to get a part. They call in the linear accelerator engineer. They meet at the center. They put the new part in. And at 9 o'clock at night, everyone's on overtime. They treat that patient. So that patient goes on vacation the next day. Pretty awesome, right?
Above and beyond.
Well, now I'm going to make you cry. Husband and wife, elderly couple, live in a nursing home. They have coronavirus. Their children are not in. They're both on ventilators. They're both separated by a wall. You remember when coronavirus was coronavirus. You remember when we were all scared that we weren't going to make it to see the next day. Every time we coughed, we thought we had it. Every time that we felt hot, we thought we had it. There were very strict rules about what to do. We were dealing with like a Pandora's box, right? Like almost like an Ebola virus. Like it was just absolutely overwhelming. So then they were dying. This couple, they were married for 50 years. So the intensive care unit, you know, they said, you know, screw this. Get that bed. You bring this bed. Let's bring these beds together. They brought the two beds together. The husband and wife were able to hold hands for their last breaths, and they did not, and they died minutes apart. Those people did not have to do that. They did their job. They did the best they could. These patients were going to die. And they did die. They didn't save their lives. They couldn't save their lives. And they taped this for their children. So their children knew that their mom and dad were together for their last breath. And that's called the discretionary, that's a discretionary effort. As far as seamless service, you know, our friend, Christina, Dr. Stephenson from,
yes,
from Lillibolt. And there was the other Christina, the yeah. two Christinas.
Yeah.
Yep. So in her hospital, there was a patient that was a hospice patient who lived 80 miles away from the hospital. And the patient had what's called ascites, and in plain English, that means their entire abdominal cavity, their belly, was full of fluid. And the patient had to come in and get this fluid drained. But the patient was too unstable to have this done and then, you know, be discharged home. So what they did was they did the procedure, and then the medical staff was able to stabilize the patient and personally drive the patient 80 miles back to their home on hospice with medical supervision. And the patient was able to achieve that within a 24-hour period rather than a two-week period. And they ended up being home on hospice. That's called seamless service. And fear mitigation, you know, as you guys get to know me a little better, you know, my love of sports, my passion for the New York Mets, my unusual quirks, my jersey wearing habits and things like that. Well, I also love Harry Potter. I love everything about Harry Potter. My kids were raised, you know, on Harry Potter, reading them their books, getting them their books, going at midnight to book parties when the books were released, and the whole thing. I have some of my greatest memories with the kids, you know, with Harry Potter. And there was a scene in one of the movies where the children, you know, the students at the school had to imagine what their worst nightmare was, what they were afraid of. Mm-hmm. So I think Ron was afraid of spiders.
Yes.
And Harry was afraid of the
Dementors.
The Dementors, and someone was afraid of Snape. I think Harry might have been afraid of Snape. And what the professor tried to do was try to have them take that image, that Bogart, right? And then change that image into something completely not threatening. So I think that the spider had then got roller skates.
Yeah, ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. And then Snape was a baby.
No, Snape would turn into like a women's clothing.
Yeah, right. He was dressed like a silly old lady, right?
Somebody had a snake and it turned into one of those.
Right, into the Jack in the Box.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes,
gotcha. Yes, yeah. Yes. So again, fear mitigation is when your healthcare provider is able to be that professor, is able to find out what is your Bogart? Is it dying? Is it pain? Is it not being able to reconcile with your children that you haven't spoken to in 20 years? You know, what is it that you fear most, and what can we do, you know, to mitigate that fear? What can we do to go above and beyond that, you know, to eradicate that fear? And last but not least, we're going to talk about another thing. And actually, Angel and I were talking about this today. Angel's job here in the hospital is he works down in the on the switchboard, and he's trying to manage you know, a lot of things that need some changes. And it's very difficult for you to see people in pain, to see people not get answers, to see people suffer, you know, because of the broken, you know, the broken systems or whatever. And I think that Angel, and here's a commercial for Angel, right? if any of the upper administration listens to the podcast, here's a kid who's so passionate and so smart and just so creative. Talk about, you know, empathetic creativity. And Angel has that in spades as well. He'd be a great person to solve some of these problems. And what we look at when we look at a person like Angel, we see a value to him. We hire Angel not for his skills, but for his values. What are your values? You really want him. I see it in your heart. I see it in your eyes. I see it in your soul. Every time we talk offline, you really want this place to run well. You really want the patients to be served. You're not a doctor, but you sometimes care more about the outcome of a patient than some of my colleagues. So you would be hired for your values as well as your skills. I'm going to tell you really, really two really scary stories, one actually related to an employee here and one related to a kid that I was interviewing many years ago, maybe in the beginning of my practice. We'll start with that one first. So there was a young man that I actually knew from internship. He was, I think he was a year behind me. And I knew his wife. She was a GYN. And I knew him because he was doing his internship and was going to go into radiation oncology after his internship. And he was brilliant. Angel, this kid was brilliant. He went to MIT. He was just a very smart kid. And I knew he was going to become a great radiation oncologist. I think he was going to do his residency over at University of Pennsylvania. So just a very bright, bright guy, great future. And a couple of years later, when he was all done with his training, he called me for a job. And I said, yeah, I'd love to talk to you. And I brought him in for the day, sat down, we caught up. We both had a passion for bicycle riding, talked about bikes and things like that. And we were talking about patients. And I said, well, you know, here's the way we usually run things here. He goes, you actually see patients? I go, yeah, of course I do. You touch patients? I go, yeah. You examine patients? I go, yeah. I go, but this is radiation oncology. You never have to see a patient. All you have to do is look at the x-rays and draw in the tumor and let the physicist do everything else. And you never have to leave your office. I go, dude, that's radiology. That's not radiation oncology. I think you got things opposite, you know, terrible. Meaning that was this guy skilled? Absolutely. Was his values and my values aligned? Absolutely not. So that would be an example of that. The fishing pole story just happened yesterday, so it's really fresh in my mind. And this is one of the things we're talking about, trust, not so much trust in your doctor or your nurse, but trust in your medical system, trust in your coworkers. Now, I run a very egalitarian department where everyone is equal, including me. I'm not above or below anyone. No one is above or below anyone. We are all friends. We are family. We fight, but we love each other. And we are all basically connected by our pledge to put our patient first. And I had a patient a few months ago came to see me, and I had seen him for years, maybe over a decade. And he was a lymphoma survivor. And he and I love fishing, but he's a real fisherman. I mean, I'm a fake fisherman, but this guy was a real fisherman. I mean, he caught fish. That's what kind of fisherman he was. So, I mean, he would bring me in articles from the 1970s for those of you on the East Coast or the Northeast area, the metropolitan New York area. And if you like to fish for stripers and you're a surf caster, you know that Montauk is sort of the mothership. That's sort of like, that's the, you know, the Valhalla of striper fishing. And he would bring me articles from the 70s about his records with striper fishing and things. And over the last couple of years, you know, he's getting older. He's really not doing well. He's his end is near. You know, it's his time to be with God soon. And I pulled him aside and I said to him a few months ago when I saw him, I said, you know what I'm going to do for you? We are going to go fishing together, you and I. I'm going to call your daughter, and I'm going to set it up. And when the stripers are running in October, I'm going to pick you up, and we're going to go to Montauk, and we're going to stay in a hotel, and we're going to go to the boat, and we're going to pick your spot out, and I'm going to introduce you to the captain, and you're going to be all set. You're going to have all your equipment set up for you. We're going to have one of the mates just hang out with you, and you're going to be all set. You can sit down and fish all day and catch stripers and have the greatest time ever. And this really moved him. He was really, really so happy because he hadn't been fishing in years and years and years. And over the week, so now 5 months go by or whatever. And I texted him over the weekend and I said, listen, you know, this is Dr. Iannelli. I just want to let you know, I didn't forget about you. I'm starting to do some research on the boats. We're going to go in October. We'll spend the day together. We'll stay overnight. We'll catch some stripers. And he says, Doc, I just want to let you know. And I have to also tell you, this was all done by text. And this actually relates to the story. because he's pretty deaf. He really can't hear anything. So we're texting, we're communicating through text because he can't hear me on the telephone. So I can see, like, we're joking around. He was telling me he might lose his foot. And I'm telling him to bring it with us. We could use it for bait, you know, and we're laughing and we're kind of joking around. And he's saying, Doc, you know, I'm going to do my best to be better so we can go fishing. And then Monday comes. So this happened over the weekend. And he came to the door with an antique 12-foot fishing rod.
Wow.
Not a reel, no hooks or anything like that. And this is where the story gets sad, where I think we, again, hired a person that may have been skilled at what he did, but he certainly didn't have the values that we appreciate here. First of all, he wouldn't let the guy in the door. Number two is he wouldn't let the fishing pole in the door. Now, you have to understand, this is a guy who could barely walk. He's, you know, going on 75. He's on his way out, the poor guy. I love him, you know, but his time on earth is limited. And he came to give me as a gift his, like, prized fishing pole. This fishing pole was antique. It was never used. It was absolutely, like, if you're a car guy, this would be like your Lambo. This would be your, like, your Ferrari. I mean, it was just gorgeous. I mean, it really showed the craftsmanship. It was, but more than that, it was the gesture. He got in a car, you know, he's really sick. He got in a car, he brought this to me, and it wasn't such that I really cared that the security guy wouldn't let him in or whatever, but it was just the whole attitude. Like, he called his supervisor saying, we don't let people in the hospital with long, sharp objects. But I mean, thinking that this patient was a terrorist, you're kind of losing, like, sometimes you have to kind of just put blinders on to the rules. Yes. And sometimes you got to use the common sense that God gave you. And you just have to say, you know, I have to make this patient's experience, like, this patient giving me this gift was a, you, like, forget even about the fishing pole. It was just the gesture,
right,
of him giving me something that was so important to him because he appreciated that I was showing empathetic creativity. Again, getting back to that empathetic creativity. So then the story gets funnier, actually. And you would have been very proud of me. I did not engage with the guy. I didn't do my typical doctor tantrum, baby tantrum. I didn't even really talk to him. I just, like, listened, and I was really respectful because, you know, we don't want to make people feel uncomfortable or whatever. And of course, in this day and age, we're living in a different day and age. You know, there are rules, and as silly as they may be, if we choose to work here, which I want to work here until I die, you know, you have to follow the rules. So I said to the kid, and this was a young guy, and I said to him, listen, okay, I get you. I'll walk the patient back. And then what I'll do is I'll take the fishing pole. I'll bring it to my office. I'll get my keys and I'll go put it in my car. And he goes, no, you can't bring that fishing pole in the hospital. I go, okay, then I'm going to leave it here. I'll go to my office. I'll get my keys. I'll take the fishing pole and I'll bring it to my car. And he goes, no, you can't leave it here. You can't leave this with me because I'm not responsible for that fishing pole. So you see what I'm saying? Like, you have to make sure you get the right people in order to develop. Now, my poor patient left, probably that whole gesture was tarnished, you know, by this interface that he had with our security guard. And was it really necessary to do that? No. Did he have to bring the fishing pole in? Okay, I would have had no problem with that. But show a little humor. You know, have a little compassion. Have a little empathy. Put yourself in this guy's shoes that he's sick, he's older, he brought this, his prized possession. Treat him good. Treat him like he matters. Put yourself in his position. And these are the things, Angel, that we're going to be talking about with Raina and Len.
Do you think that possibly, and again, it doesn't take away from the story, it won't add or take away from the story, but do you think that maybe if the security guard knew the patient and he was more of a regular and he, you know what I mean, like, there was a bond there?
Well, you know, here's the thing, and this is where I think it really pertains to the article, you know, because I'm not telling you this story because I want to tell the story. I'm telling it because it relates to the paper.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So I think what what this paper screams to all of us, you know, doctors and nurses, of course, but anybody who interfaces with patients. You interface with patients on a switchboard side. This young man interfaces with patients, you know, on the security side. And he also has a job to keep us all safe. But you have to kind of remember what you're here for.
Correct.
You're here for the patient. You're here for the human experience. And sometimes that human experience goes above, outside of the boundaries of just taking care of their medical needs. Let's go back to our four examples. The young 8-year-old kid could have been treated with radiation without the superhero costume or without the taping or whatever. And I'm sure he would have gotten wonderful care. But that kid is going to remember that experience forever and ever and ever and ever. That couple who died hand in hand, those children are going to be able to sleep that much better knowing that their parents were together in their last breaths. If this young man was running the ICU, I guarantee that would have never happened. Let's use the example of that young lady who was going on vacation. If you have a hospital administrator who only looks at the bottom line and only looks at, you know, what happens, like, you know, I'm not paying overtime for that. You know, so the patient doesn't go on vacation. You know what? Life's tough, you know, suck it up, you know, but thank God we have a Regina and we have a Betty that fight for our patients. And, you know, they have to explain to their superiors, you know, why they were over budget that month. But thankfully we have people like Brian and all these great people here who would absolutely identify with that and won't give them a hard time. Look at the Lily Bolt example, you know, people going out of their way. Getting back to the example of the vacation lady, I mean, imagine sending a person out, you know, on hospital time to go pick up a part for a machine.
Yeah.
Or imagine being in Lily Bolt and you're like literally driving a patient home to supervise them medically, that they just had 5 liters of fluid taken off their belly, so they're medically safe. I mean, this is what we're talking about. This is the empathy. This is the discretionary empathy, the discretionary effort, the empathetic creativity, the seamless service, the fear mitigation, as well as hiring for value, not just for skills. I want to take a moment to recognize my dear friend, co-host, producer Angel Santana. We are so grateful to you, Angel. We would not be here without you. Thank you for getting this out. I always concentrate on content, but if it wasn't for you, none of the things that I say or that I try to get out to the Croc Nation would ever get there. Angel's podcast, Have Faith, Let It Begin. Funny, moving, inspirational. You will laugh with Angel. You will cry with Angel. You will pray with Angel. If you're afraid, he will basically tuck you in and put you under his wing. Great bunch of people, even his listeners. I've met some of them on a Zoom call for his anniversary, and just wonderful, 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 wonderful people. Rod Freeman, I always kind of gloss over. I want to spend a few minutes talking about Rod. Rod, God bless you. If it wasn't for you, again, we would be nowhere. You are my social media. You are my website guy. You are my criticizer and my cheerleader. You absolutely are an amazing man. You're a good man. You absolutely believe in this podcast. You believe in what we're trying to do. And for anybody out there who has a small business that might profit or benefit from having someone like Rod help you with their website, help you with their advertising, help you with your social media interface, Rod would be your guy, and that would be Rod Freeman at Small Biz Up. We have our unbelievably generous sponsors, Michael John Benzea, Charlotte Larson. God bless you. We love you. You believe in us. If it wasn't for you guys, we would not be here. And on behalf of Angel Santana, on behalf of Tom Iannelli, on behalf of everyone who loves cancer survivors, I end this podcast as I end every podcast. I wish, with Angel, you all a very long,
healthy, happy, cancer-free life. God bless you. God keep you. Peace.